Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Hello everyone and welcome back to 2024. Yes, Knowing Wheel returns, episode 153 of your favourite Formula One show. And now we can say goodbye to all of the Matt212 viewers. Yes, we're exclusively now here on the Knowing Wheel YouTube channel. There'll be a link down in the description below to Spotify and Apple playlists and all that good stuff. But we return once again, and I thought in a big, big shake-up ready for 2024. We've got a lot of plans, a lot of expectations, and things we want to do. Unfortunately, didn't have the budget, though, to get a new co-host in. I'm still joined by Jamie183. How are you doing, my guy?
I'm good. Happy New Year to you and everyone watching at home. And back on our own channel, which is quite something. I feel like people will have forgotten, to be honest. So if you're watching this on the Knowing Wheel channel, go to Matt's channel and spam his comments being like, come and watch Knowing Wheel on the new channel, please.
I'm sure you'll do that for us. we apologise. Podcasts obviously have been a little bit thin on the ground, obviously, over the last couple of weeks. I mean, let's be fair, fairly quiet real life Formula One season. It's the winter breaks. We're actually well into the depths now of the winter breaks. We've only got, 7 weeks before winter testing kicks off in Bahrain, which is kind of mad to think about.
Almost there, pretty much.
But there is a little bit of news to go through, and we thought today, as you know, we kind of set our eye. We want to kind of leave 2023 behind us, don't we, Jamie? At least based on F1. We want to look forward to 2024. So what we've decided to do today is bring you guys a list of 5 drivers we think that are under pressure in 2024. But before that, we have got a few other little news pieces to go through, haven't we, Jamie?
Yes. New Year's honours is a thing in the UK, which is, you know, because we're... our country doesn't really make sense. We just hand out random honours to people at New Year's Eve.
Yep.
So the King and the Royal Family has made Christian Horner a CVE, which means... I don't know what it means. It's not... Is it...
I can tell you've done your research.
Yeah, I don't know what
you,
CVE
you
means,
brought this news to the table.
I know that it's the worst honour out of the three that most people get. So he's on his way. It's good. He'll be a sir one day, just like Lewis Hamilton.
We love it.
Doesn't really mean much, but it's quite cool. I always like F1 people being recognised in real life, in separate, outside of F1 life.
I mean, to start 2024, that has got to be an awful first segment. Christian Horner has been given an award. We don't know what it's for. It's not that great, but it's nice that Formula One's been mentioned.
It's for services to motorsport in the UK, I believe, or something like that.
Did you see as well, to add to that, Ron Dennis has also been given an honour, except for his for charitable work. So, but again...
Is that when he worked for McLaren Honda recently?
He got kicked out pretty quickly, didn't he, in the McLaren Honda days. It worries me, Jamie, that was almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
We are so old, it's so depressing.
That is rough. No one even knows what a GP2 engine is anymore.
No, exactly. And what worries me is how many of our viewers probably don't know who Ron Dennis was either. But, you know...
Never mind. He's not that relevant anymore, to be honest.
He's not relevant at all anymore in Formula One terms.
No.
But the bigger news has got to be Alfa Romeo, that is no longer Alfa Romeo, that is Sauber, that is State Kick Formula One Racing, does officially now have a Formula One name for 2024, don't they?
Yes. Stake F1 Team, which is proper dumb. It makes it sound like Jeremy Clarkson's meat car from the Grand Tour.
I think it's better than the other name they had running for a few weeks.
What was... Stake F1 Team Kick Sauber.
Yeah.
I mean, that was always the chassis name, wasn't it? Or like the team entry. So it's you know, they're just a title sponsor. I'm still going to call them Sauber, probably. Yes. And interestingly, last season, obviously, Stake sponsored Alfa Romeo, and they weren't allowed to have steak on the car in certain countries for their betting rules, or gambling rules, or something. So there'll be certain races where they're not called Steak F1 Team; they're just called Kick F1 Team instead.
Yeah, I mean,
so that'll be fun.
I don't think it's gonna make much difference in the grand scheme of things for, you know, day-to-day viewers of the sport and that kind of thing. Like, I mean, this has definitely happened before in the sport, because obviously Formula One and dodgy sponsors go hand in hand. But I believe it's only 4, maybe 5 Grand Prix that they're probably going to have to be Kick. But I think if it showcases anything, it's just the insane amount of money that State can throw at things. Because let's be fair, this project can't really go anywhere. You know, it cannot be a long-term investment. There is no chance in a million years that, you know, a global motorsport brand like Audi would become Audi Steak Formula One Team. Because, of course, they don't want to be associated with that, I'm sure. But it is kind of mind-boggling, the fact that Steak can... Well, I mean, is it probably in the ballpark, do we reckon, of 80 to 100 million quid for a two-season deal?
Probably, yeah.
And
quite easily,
you know, Alfa Romeo, or sorry, Steak now, I guess, or Sauber. Let's just call them Sauber.
Sauber.
It's easier, isn't it? Let's be fair. I get the impression that all of the team's focus now is on the 2026 regs. I mean, we haven't done a predictions for next season, or well, this season now, I suppose, so far. But I would not be averse to putting them in last, because I think all their focus now is going to be on getting Audi in and in good footing. But
they'll probably be bottom two for sure.
Well, they were this year, weren't they, in the end? It kind of feels like, yeah, State can just kind of throw... I mean, it's good for the sport in one sense, because, of course, Sauber might well have struggled over these next couple of years had State not
opted. They've never been super stable.
No, apart from BMW.
Have they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
and even that only lasted a few years.
Exactly.
So... yes, they've got a new name. They've had new names before. Sauber will always just come back, because it always does.
Pretty much. It really does. Of course, unfortunately, we never really heard anything, because there were rumblings, weren't there, last year, that Alfa Romeo could sponsor Haas. But even that always seemed like a bit of a half-baked, odd deal at the end of the day.
Yeah, Alfa Romeo, their return to F1 since 2018 has been a little bit weird. Where they're kind of... everyone bigged it up as this massive return because they won in the 50s, but... it's really just a title sponsorship, and like, they're not really back. They don't seem to really care that they've been replaced, and they've not really tried that hard to stay. So,
well, I think it's bizarre though, isn't it? Because of course they're owned by Fiat, which also owns Ferrari.
Ferrari.
So obviously it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't that Chrysler Corp or Fiat desperately needed another Formula One team or something like that to kind of flex their muscles. And you said, obviously, about how they were trying to like build up the hype and that kind of thing. It seemed like it was only Alfa Romeo that were doing that, because the rest of us knew that it wasn't really going to be... you know,
Marcus Ericsson wasn't the next Fangio.
No, exactly. Exactly. Very, very odd times. However, you know, they did give rise to Charles Leclerc. That's gone well. Iffy, up to this point.
That's harsh.
I mean, I think...
harsh to say it hasn't gone well.
I mean, yeah, I'd make the argument that potentially his first season was still his strongest in Formula 1. Or most impressive, easily.
2022 was all right, wasn't it?
2022 was decent as well. And I mean, but go back, Jamie, and watch his Brazil 2018 qualifying effort.
Yeah, it was car OP. Ericsson out qualified him.
No, he didn't. So not in Brazil.
He did. Ericsson qualified 6th.
Did he?
Yep.
Oh, fair enough.
Goat.
Fair enough. There we go. Then scrap that. Charles Leclerc's 2018 season in the bin, ladies and gentlemen, to kickstart 2024. Shall we get then, Jamie? Because this is going to be a fairly short podcast. Because you've got places to be, haven't you? You're off travelling.
I'm off to London at 9 o'clock, and it's currently 8:25.
We love it.
There we go.
We love it. How is the HS2 line?
Oh, yeah, great. That made it here, didn't it? Cheers, government.
Are you happy with that money? Well, I mean, when you get to London, you're going to be able to go on their nice new roads, aren't you, that they desperately need?
Yeah, but they've restructured the money from HS2 up to North London. Fantastic.
Let's be fair, it was always as far as HS2 was going to go. We love a little political talk.
Yeah,
on
that's
knowing
enough politics for now.
Where do we start then, Jamie? We've got a list of 5 drivers that we think are most under pressure in 2024.
Should we go from, like... least under pressure to most.
If you feel you can order that in a certain way, then be my guest.
Well, I think K-Mag is probably, like, I just feel like he won't feel pressure at all. Because, like, he's just here to kind of mess around a little bit.
Is he?
Like, well, you know, they're not going to win a championship. So, in that sense, kind of, obviously, he had a pretty poor 2023, but what else could he do in that car, realistically? I guess he could get into Q3 10 times like Hulk did. But, yeah, I think they would have to have a genuine talent to replace K-Mag, I think.
Ollie Bearman, 2025.
Yeah. But then do you think K-Mag really would care about losing his seat at this point? Because, like,
I mean, he's come back twice. I'd think so.
Yeah. But, like, if it's a choice between driving around in 19th place or going home and raising a family, well, I don't know. I feel like he wouldn't be that averse, because he's had a good run. I feel like he's done well to last this long.
Well, he's got more podiums than his teammate, I suppose.
Well, if you... Yeah, the one race, his first ever race, and it's downhill ever since.
I don't know. You say that. I feel like... You know, in Formula One, drivers often talk about this, don't they? That once they have kids, it kind of changes the way you drive and that kind of thing.
Mm.
I don't feel like K-Mag thinks like that, though, is the impression I get. Not that he loves his kid any less than any other Formula One driver. Yeah. But just you kind of get the sense that, you know, because I think it's that thing, isn't it, at the end of the day? Every Formula One driver, and I remember Jenson Button talking about K-Mag exclusively, they get to Formula 1, they've dominated junior Formula, and he said Kevin Magnussen basically came into Formula 1 expecting to dominate, because that's what he'd done, obviously, throughout junior. Obviously, hasn't happened, will never happen, because bless him, he's Kevin Magnussen. But do I get the sense that, you know, he'd not want to, like, if Haas turned around and went, oh, sorry, we're hiring someone else, he'd go, oh, no, that's a shame, I'm going to go home. No, I don't.
Yeah, maybe not. Although in 2020... You don't remember that much fuss being kicked up when that exact thing happened to him.
I mean, he went to IMSA, though, didn't he? And had some fun in America
for a
year.
Yeah, I guess he had some other... I think he could go and do that quite easily.
Okay, that's what he would do, I believe. I think he would go back to sports cars, whether that be World Endurance or IMSA.
Because I guess if... The thing is, if you think about drivers under pressure, you're always like, who is putting them under pressure? And for the Haas drivers, it's Ollie Bearman, realistically. Or I guess you could throw... Kimi Antonelli in there too.
Merck
Jr.
Haas.
Oh, is he Merck?
Yeah, he's Mercedes.
So yeah, it probably is just Bearman, to be honest. So you think if Bearman wins F2, for instance, or if he's top three, then he needs a seat somewhere, and it's probably one of the Haas seats.
Yeah, I think it's...
In which case, yeah, he needs... If K-Man wants to stay, he probably needs to beat Hülkenberg realistically.
Yeah, I wonder if there's still a bit of reluctancy within Ferrari against putting, because let's be fair, Haas is not the place to host a junior driver, is it? And I think we've mentioned this before for years, but like, I know people love Gunther Steiner and all this, that, and the other. I would say he's probably the worst team principal.
He's down there.
I just think, you know, he's hyped up because he swears on Drive to Survive a lot. He hasn't really delivered much with Haas, has he? To be fair, the first couple of years, 2016, 2018 were pretty good. But
even 2018 was, and 2016 were just off the back of having good Ferraris in 15 and 17.
Well, exactly. You know, it does beg the question, you know, will we see a shake-up within Haas in the future? And could Kevin Magnussen get lost kind of in that flurry? I think let's segue over, Jim. I'm going to do this beautifully. Of course, you know, you mentioned there that Ollie Bearman could be a threat to the Haas seat. I feel that the other one, of course, sensibly, that it could be a threat to, has got to be that Sauber seat. And Zhou Guanyu is... I know you're going to hate this, but Zhou Guanyu is second on our list, isn't he? Because he's just not really kicking on, is he?
Yeah. No, I completely agree, sadly. But, because he started 2023 pretty well. Like, he had a couple of ninth places in the first six, seven races, which, with the car, was decent. And then... Second half of the season, I guess the car didn't really help, and Bottas didn't really score that many points either.
With the exception of Qatar,
But then Joe finished right behind him in Qatar.
No, exactly. Well, so, you know, that's what I meant, both of them.
But then they just drowned in the whole middle of the season. So, yeah, I just think 2025, Teo Pourchaire will be in one of those seats.
Yes.
I could almost certain of it. So, yeah, who do they replace? I think, to be fair, it's probably a straight fight. I think whoever wins the championship battle probably keeps their seat.
And
out of Bottas and Joe.
Who would we suggest wins that championship battle?
Well, probably Bottas, realistically. but you never know, because like, Joe started 23 pretty much on a par with Bottas. He just got worse as the season went on. So if he can just kind of reset, find out like where it was going wrong, what he was doing right at the start of 23, maybe. And obviously, if the car's pretty poor, like, it's less about points and more about performances, isn't it? So if he can, you know, out-qualify, start to out-race more, then suddenly it could be okay. But, yeah, I do think that Joe is unlikely to be driving for Sauber in 2025. But
is that your big controversial statement, is it?
He's probably got options, or an option, somewhere else.
Being? I'm intrigued.
I mean, I still think he'll go to Williams in 25, to be honest.
Really? Do you not think, you know, a Kimi Antonelli could be there?
Not in 25. It's too soon.
Well, remember, Jamie, there's a car reset in F2, and it's Prema.
Yeah.
Prema on the first year of a car reset is probably going to wipe the floor.
I just think that Joe is a step up from Logan Sargeant, and Joe yeah, and
Kimi Antonelli might be a step up from both of them.
Maybe. Who knows?
I think Alfa Romeo have kind of really got, or Sauber, sorry, even I should call it. This is going to take forever to get used to.
It's going to take a while, yeah.
Sauber kind of have really got two options, don't they, in 2024, it feels like. If Bottas is kind of thinking, I might give it up at the end of the year. I might just go cycling permanently or make more calendars. Whatever Bottas wants to do. Do you kind of aim to steer Zhou Guanyu into a potential lead driver? That means if you bring in an Ollie Bearman next year, or if you bring in a Teo Pourchaire next year, you have got a driver there that can kind of be trained in by Joe, or of course replace Joe instead, and obviously then get that training, because Bottas, let's be fair, has been a number one to Zhou Guanyu, has helped him out and embedded him in that team. Or,
well, he's not done a great job.
As we mentioned as well, of course, you know, Sauber the next couple of years aren't going to matter in the long term. I think, you know, they could be very much sacrificed. Do we get to the end of this year? Bottas kind of goes, yeah, I'm thinking about giving it up. And they go, right, Bottas is going, Joe, you're out. Teo Pourchaire, we'll put our future star in. And we'll give Ollie Bearman the run as well. Do they put two rookies in for the final season of a regs cycle? And
has that happened? Has that actually gone well since like 2015, having two rookies?
Well, the only real example we've got is what? 2021 Haas.
Yeah.
But again,
just think rookies these days, there's so much to learn about F1 that you...
But my point is...
It's the blind leading the blind, isn't it?
But I think my point is with that, of course, if it's the last season of a reg cycle, the team know a lot more about how to set up the cars. If it's the last year of a reg cycle when you've got a huge manufacturer coming in anyway next year, doesn't really matter too much. If you can just get those drivers prepared to potentially, you know, either lead or obviously have that funding for a year or two, or of course get dropped at the end of that year and go elsewhere. You know, if that's you're in the Ferrari program, it could, you know, could that be in 2026 you see a swap? Because of course we've heard all these rumours that Audi are quite interested in Carlos Sainz to lead the team. You know, could that be a swap between Bearman and Sainz potentially down the line?
Could be.
There's a lot of kind of, you know, do you sort of play 2024, 2025 ready for 2026, isn't it?
Yeah. I do think, personally, I think it was probably a straight fight, Bottas and Joe. So they're going to both be under pressure to some extent, but I guess whoever starts the season better will feel slightly more comfortable. And then, yeah, Pourchaire's in one of those seats in 25, and whoever wins gets the other one.
Yeah, I think that's... There's kind of a lot of will they, won't they, isn't there, around that team. Obviously, you mentioned, though, that Zhou Guanyu, you know, you think he could be off to Williams. I think that'll be Kimi Antonelli, but there we are. That does, though, lead us nicely into our third driver, doesn't it, Jamie? Which, of course, is
Indeed.
Logan Sargeant.
Yes. And, yeah, we saw all one of the big narratives at the back end of 23 was Williams kind of waiting for Sargent to do something before they confirmed his seat. So, because you saw all throughout, they really wanted to have him. They wanted to extend his drive. But he just wasn't really doing anything to warrant getting it for a long time, until right at the end. He obviously got points in COTA, but that was fairly fortunate.
And got a bit screwed in Vegas. People do forget Vegas was probably his best drive of the year.
Yeah. He was unlucky not to do slightly better there, but he still lost to Albon quite comfortably. So, yes, I think he definitely is under pressure, because he only officially got confirmed after the season finished. And, yeah, if he doesn't kick on, then he's probably on the chopping block, to be honest. He has to out-qualify Albon at some point in the next 23 races, doesn't he?
24 races, Jamie. Come on. Unless he's got to do it before Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, realistically, probably the next 17 races to get a seat. But, yes, I don't know. I'm not blown away by Logan Sargeant in Formula 1, to be honest.
Yeah, so. I think I'm going to mention his name again. I think it could be a question of maybe not, because let's be fair, Albon, people kind of remember him for his failed time against Verstappen, but he's a pretty good driver outside of that. Like, he's highly rated at the end of this year. You know, he did a lot of good work with Williams.
But he's not in the top 6 or 7. He's probably in the top 10.
Yeah, but that's still not bad going for a driver that's still kind of on a rebound, finding his feet.
It's not an Alonso Verstappen whitewash. You know?
Oh, no.
It's an Alex Albon whitewash. So it's like, how bad are you?
Yeah, I think, you know, if there's a Formula 2 driver that has a really, really good campaign next year, and whether you're a Mercedes or a Red Bull or even less likely but potentially a Ferrari, you know, could you be knocking on Williams' door? Could you be saying, you know, you've got Logan Sargeant, he brings this and that to your team, and like, we get it, he's one of your juniors, how does 20 million sound? Lob this kid in next year. I think, depending on how well he does next year, that would be quite a decent offer for Williams.
Yeah, and I think James Vowles has got a sensible head on him, so probably he's going to be pragmatic. And you saw, like, I have no doubt that Williams wants Sargeant to do well, and they clearly are giving everything they can to help him do well, but it just wasn't quite coming towards the latter, like, until the very, very end of the season. They didn't feel like they could extend him because he wasn't good enough. So, did something change in 3 weeks? I don't know. But if he starts well, he'll be absolutely fine. But I just worry that he has a couple of crashes like he did this season, and then suddenly you're in a European season, not scored any points, your teammate's smashing it, and you're just kind of drowning.
Yeah, I think it's the early season, I think, is going to tell the story, isn't it, with Logan Sargeant. Either he'll kick on and, you know, not, you know, he's. I don't think sensibly it's fair to expect him to beat Albon, you know, 2 weeks in every five or something like that. But I think if he can get close to Albon, you know, make it into Q2 a bit more often. Say an Albon makes it into a Q3, he lines up 11th or 12th here or there, that kind of thing. You know, potentially snookers away a couple of points, or is close to a couple of points. Even if he's, you know, running in the points and has an unlucky strategy call or something like that.
Yeah, people see that.
People will see that and notice. But I think it's going to really have to be, you know, put the work in over the winter, get yourself ready for the start of the year, put the hours in during pre-season testing, and try and kick on from there. Otherwise, you're on a very, very slippery slope. Exactly. Learn what a kilometre is. Number four, then, Jamie. I am going to go out on a limb. I think I've said this before. Is genuinely the driver that I think could get dropped from their team mid-season. It's Sergio Perez.
Yes, and this narrative, this drum has been beaten an awful lot in 2023. But similarly, with the seat thing, if you look at those four Red Bull seats, or AlphaTauri's, Liam Lawson is, like, chiseled on to be in that team in 2025.
Well, he's been promised it by Red Bull.
Yeah, I pretty much think he's been guaranteed it because of how well he did in the substitute appearances in 2023. So, if Liam Lawson's in one of those seats, obviously Verstappen's not going anywhere. you've got one Red Bull seat and two AlphaTauris. Tsunoda is not a long-term future there, but I don't think they'd drop him. I think he's off to Aston Martin eventually.
Honda allegedly give Red Bull quite a sweet deal for Tsunoda.
Yes, well, and free unbranded engines, so great. And then you've got, obviously, Daniel Ricciardo and Sergio Perez are the other two. One of those two won't be driving in 2025 for Red Bull.
Is that the call? For Red Bull or inside either of those teams?
For Red Bull.
Right, okay.
But I think both would... I think Perez would find it easier to find another seat. Ricciardo, I don't think anyone else would pick him up, really.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So it's like almost a straight shootout, but it's a bit unfair because they're in different cars. So, yes, I don't know. It's in Perez's hands, like it was all of 23, really.
If
he's just normal. Exactly. If he just drives properly and doesn't get eliminated in Q2 or Q1, like 6 weeks in a row, then he'll be fine. But then at the end of last season, it was rare to see him on the podium, which is ridiculous when your teammate's winning 19 races.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is the big thing, isn't it? It feels to me at the moment like Red Bull are desperate, not necessarily for a big reason, but more a big excuse to get Daniel Ricciardo back in that Red Bull. You know, I think they're really, really hoping that, you know, hoping's probably strong, but they won't shy away from the idea that if Perez has a bit of a stinker to kickstart next year, I've gone on the record before in saying he could be out of that drive before Monaco. And I do genuinely believe that could happen. If he has a poor showing at the start of next year, you know, and I think, honestly, the worst case scenario is if other teams are closer to Red Bull. You know, if Max
and
can
I think
still...
they have to be.
I think they will. I hope they will. But I think, you know, if Max can still kind of, you know, what's that, round 7 of the year? If Max has rattled off sort of 4 or 5 wins by that point, and say, Checo's behind a Lando Norris, behind a Charles Leclerc, behind a Hamilton or a Russell in the championship as well, I think it could very quickly be off to AlphaTauri. You can rot out the rest of the season. You can find your own drive for 25, go wherever you like. You know, whether that ends up being an Audi for 2026 or whether he calls it a day. The impression I get at the moment and the way kind of Red Bull politics works, I just really think that they're not like got him pushed up against, you know, the edge of a cliff ready to push him, but are more than happy to, say, expect a gust of wind.
Yeah, I don't know. I genuinely don't think Ricciardo would do any better.
Nor do thing. I never suggested that either. I think it would sell a lot of t-shirts, I think is the point.
It would sell a lot of t-shirts and caps. But then are you really, like, your point of being, if Red Bull aren't dominant anymore, if they're close to other teams, is swapping Perez for Ricciardo really going to help that? I don't think so. So, like, if it's performance-based, then they might as well just keep Perez. But I think it's more likely to get swapped if they are dominant ridiculously and Max is winning every race and Perez is finishing fourth or fifth.
Yeah, yeah.
Has to mess something up, that's the thing. It's a bit like Kvyat.
If he beans it a couple of times, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Going into 2016, you could tell that they wanted Verstappen in that car.
Oh, yeah. I read a brilliant article.
They couldn't swap Kvyat.
Yeah,
they couldn't swap Kvyat until he messed something up. So, first time he did, they got rid of him.
I read a brilliant article last week from Danny Kvyat talking about that. Do you know, going into that Chinese Grand Prix, he was actually in talks with Ferrari to replace Raikkonen for 17. Mm. And then took both cars out twice.
Took both of them out and then stood by it.
And Ferrari were like, yeah, get in the bin. And so were Red Bull.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing at the moment. It just feels like there's not the same kind of momentum as it was to get Verstappen in that Red Bull drive years ago. But I feel like there is a bit of a push within Red Bull at the moment going, well, we'll get Danny Rick back in. You know, he's great marketing. Because let's be fair, you know, there's a core of people that like Max. But outside of that, there's a very, very big group that dislike him and dislike Red Bull.
Dislike Red Bull.
And you kind of think, well, you get the smiley Australia back in, people will like you again, it'll be fine.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. It'll be, Red Bull are like the pantomime villains, really, aren't they? So
they are. And they're quite happy to have that face role. In.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you do feel like, yeah, some, they are like the Sith, basically.
There you go. That's your quote of the week. Red Bull are like the Sith, according to Jamie183.
They're going to blow up a planet in a second.
Probably. Final one then, Jamie. It's not quite in the same context as all the others, because I don't think he'd get dropped or anything like
that. No, there's no imminent threat to that seat, I don't think.
But he's certainly under pressure for different reasons. That has got to be George Russell.
Yes. Very poor in 2023.
I think very poor is strong. Poor, yes.
Not very. Yeah, poor. Poor. Below average. Like maybe a 5 out of 10. So, not great. Not great from him. But it's not pressure in the same way because, yeah, Mercedes are not going to drop him. We'll go on a record and say that. George Russell will be driving for Mercedes in 2025. The thing that he's under pressure about is Lewis Hamilton's got maybe three or four years left. After Hamilton retires, Mercedes have got a decision of who to hire as a second driver.
Kimi Antonelli.
Do they hire... Well, Kimi Antonelli maybe is ready by then.
Should be.
Should be. But if he doesn't kick on as hard as people think he will, like, if you're thinking, do we keep Russell as the team leader? Or do we go and hire a Charles Leclerc, who probably beats George Russell?
Max Verstappen.
Do I dare say that? Definitely beats George Russell.
Do I say that?
Yes, do it. What, Verstappen or someone else?
Yeah, no, Verstappen.
Yeah, I think Verstappen could. He'd have, like, obviously Red Bull would have to drop the ball a bit. And Mercedes have to pick it up to 2014 to 16 standards. But yeah, I don't know if Russell carries on the way he started in 2023. Are they going to be happy with him leading the team? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it, with George Russell? Because it's kind of like that meme. I think you've probably seen it around as well. Of, like, that boxer, isn't it? Going like, oh yeah, I'm going to beat him up. Yeah. And then he goes, damn, he got hands.
Damn that, he got hands.
And it's kind of like Russell, you know, spent 3 years. I'm waiting for all the Polish fans to go, but Kubica just scored more points in 19. Yeah, Russell still had an average out qualifying performance of about a second over Kubica. Yep. And then basically spent 2 years beefing Nicholas Latifi, which go, woo, great. And obviously did that one race with Merck in 2020. He was like, he was going to beat Bottas. This is the next coming.
But he didn't beat Bottas.
No, but he was going to. He should have. In the same way he was going to beat Kubica over the course of that season. But then he's gone up against Lewis Hamilton. And 2022, you know, we've said this so many times. 2022 was fantastic. But we know the story behind, you know, obviously Hamilton had come off the back of 21, was trying all these things with the car, everything like that. And he was basically the first 7 races of 2022 that Russell built a margin, and then Hamilton started taking points back out of him again between then and the end of the year, and was usually better. George was then kind of carried by taking that win in Brazil, which had Max not taken out Lewis...
Well, if probably, Lewis could have given Max a bit of space.
He didn't need to. Max had no intention of making that corner, and you know it.
Well.
Lewis... I think it's fair to say not definitely would have won that Grand Prix, but would have absolutely had a very good opportunity at it. 2023 came around. Lewis, you know, I'm not going to suggest it's prime Lewis, but hungry, that must be said.
Hungry was quality.
I think he was enjoying 2023 a lot more. And that showed
up
in
until
the points.
The point, the car just stopped working for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, overall, Lewis had a way, way better year. Like, Russell finishing 8th. In that car, which probably wasn't the 4th fastest car over the course of the season.
Yeah,
it's not the best. Not the best from Georgie. But, yeah, I think Lewis is still the team leader. I think Lewis knows that he can put George at an arm's length if he needs to. And
usually. There are occasions still where George Russell absolutely looks like he can lead Mercedes. But it's how do we get him in this position where you feel like he can do that week in, week out. You know, and it's not a question of trying to beat Lewis Hamilton week in, week out, because he's a 7-time Formula One world champion. You know, you're not going to be quicker than Lewis week in, week out. I think unless he's really, really, you know, kind of early 40s, kind of accepting, you know, I've come to the end of my contract, that's me done. But I think the thing is for George, isn't it, is he should probably be far closer to that number one role now. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Merck had originally planned, you know, whether it was going to be Lewis gives it up at the end of 24, or whether they'd planned in such a way that had Lewis decided to give up at the end of 24, that would be okay. It just doesn't seem to be happening for Russell, does it?
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Right now, if Lewis called it quits, they would hire a first driver, I think. And that says it a lot about George Russell.
Not necessarily straight away, but I feel like they could be finding themselves in a position very soon where they need to. You know, whether that's you get a Charles Leclerc or a Max Verstappen in. And then you kind of feel that George Russell would probably end up trying too hard and looking even worse.
Yeah.
You know, makes mistakes, that kind of thing. I think Russell's very, very lucky that he's still in the environment he's in. Because, let's be fair, I think Lewis doesn't really worry about the pressure of having him alongside him.
No. And it is quite hard to judge George Russell still, because his only ever teammates long-term have been Latifi and Lewis Hamilton, which is kind of opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And most drivers have had numerous teammates, and they're all kind of middling. Whereas his teammates... one of them's the greatest driver of all time, the other one's Lewis Hamilton. So
I genuinely was ready to get that clipped then.
Exactly. So, yeah, he is a hard driver to judge, but he does need a good 2024. Definitely more than two podiums. Can he grab a race win if Mercedes are good? Who knows?
I think Merck have got to be eyeing up wins this year. You know, yeah, again, it will depend on what Red Bull do at the start of the year, and it will depend where McLaren are at. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that we could see four teams win a race next year, this year. I'm building up the hype. I want to believe.
Throw in Aston Martin.
No. Red Bull,
Alonso 33.
Red Bull, McLaren, Mercedes, and Ferrari, Jamie. Aston Martin are going to be back with Alpine next year. You've heard it.
Alonso's winning a race.
Oh, there you go, Jamie. Let's say that again. Get it clipped.
11 years since his last win. Number 33 is coming for Fernando Alonso.
Wonderful. We love to see it. Have we got anything else to add, though, Jamie? It's been a rather rambly start to 2024, but we absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think we've smashed it.
Has anything happened in the Twitter sphere since, or the X sphere, I suppose, now?
Not that I can see.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you all, as always.
We'll struggle for a podcast next week, by the way.
Jamie, where are you off after London?
Switzerland for a few days.
Wonderful. He's got the life of Riley. He's got the life of Riley.
Very middle class.
Middle class? Behave.
going for a ski holiday.
Nice. Obviously, if you aren't already, please do make sure you get yourself subscribed to the channel. As obviously Jamie and I mentioned, we're going to push it more this year. But if we reach 10,000 subs here on Knowing Wheel, we are going to be doing a 24-hour challenge of trying to get to every European-based factory in Formula 1. So we'll start in Maranello, and we'll try and drive home. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. Like I said, drop a follow, everything like that. Follow all the socials, and we'll be back maybe very soon, maybe not so very soon, with more Knowing Wheel.